This is ensemble member Aura Jones, and you're listening to the Steppenwolf Theatre Company podcast.
This is literary manager Joy Meads, and I'm here talking with Madison Dirks, who's playing the role of Nick in our current production of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Hi, Madison. How are you?
Good, Joy. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure.
So why don't we start out with you just telling us a little bit about your character. What's Nick like?
Nick. Yeah, he's a young guy, around 30, we'll say. He's a biology professor at the University of New Carthage, where the play is set. Young guy, ambitious guy, he's bright, full of desire and want in his life, and he's moving his way through the world trying to get to where he wants to go and is willing to do things maybe outside the realm of what he should do, I think, in order to get them.
Mm-hmm.
He's married to a wife, Honey, who's a few years younger than he is. They were childhood sweethearts, but just a young, bright, ambitious guy who feels like he's the best in the room a lot of times. And I think, and I know a lot of people like that. And
uh-huh.
I think he's one of them. Yeah.
That's great. You know, the way that you describe him, and I think this is so right, there's a kind of strategy that seems to be always going for him about how he can get to what he wants.
Yes.
Know, using whatever ends are necessary. And I think this play is interesting in that on the surface, it's, you know, cocktail chatter.
It definitely is. Yeah.
And, but the first act is called, you know, Fun and Games, and there's
right.
strategy and very, I think, very brutal machinations happening below the surface
yeah.
of a conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, to what extent, like, how clear are those strategies in the text? Do you have to find them? Do they change for you over the course of the play?
Well, for Nick, they do. They don't, I think, manifest themselves until a little bit later on in the play. When it first starts, there's a certain game that is being played by George and Martha that I think Nick picks up on. But he's not quite sure what it is, what they're doing. He sees wheels turning, and he sees moves being made, but he's not quite sure to what end that those moves are being made for. I think he's confused about that. So he's a little wary and on his toes at the beginning and plays it a little close to the vest until time moves further into the night where he starts to see maybe where he feels he's being taken advantage of or where he's being made to be the butt of a joke or the point of an argument that George is making for some selfish reason that George has. And then later in the second act, you really see Nick try to go toe for toe with these people to combat the blows that he's receiving and land a few of his own.
How well do you think he does at that?
Not very well. I think he thinks he can do it really well. Every time we rehearse, every time we talk about it, there's a confidence that this young man has. And I think about it a lot in terms of just in my world as a person. I look at the acting world and the theater world, and I know young, talented actors who have this amazing bravado about them and this amazing confidence and how they use that in certain social situations to put them in a position to move forward in certain ways, which is sort of a necessity of the trade, I guess. But you certainly see it in Nick, and I see it that way. And he thinks in with George and Martha that he can fight them the way they are fighting him. What he doesn't know is that he is nowhere near as good at it as they are. But they kind of give him this feeling that he is. Mm-hmm. And then once he is engaged with the fight, that's when they turn the screws on.
Yeah.
And they show him how far you have to go to win these games. My overall thought with this guy is that he is way in over his head and has absolutely no idea that he is. I think he thinks he is fighting through the water when the truth is he's drowning.
Yeah.
He just doesn't realize it yet.
It's probably a type of bravado that becomes more difficult to have with age, as one ages, right?
That's what it is. And when I first was thinking about the play before we started rehearsals, my overall feeling with Nick is like, not that he's a villain per se, but what it is, what he suffers from is the arrogance of youth. Mm-hmm. And that's what it is. A young, gifted man or woman who is exceptional in certain areas, has certain gifts and talents that separates them from others, mm-hmm. can lead to an arrogance of youth, thinking that they're just good at everything and they're better than everyone across an age spectrum, which isn't true. There is a history that is accrued over time that really informs you. Mm-hmm. And Nick doesn't understand that. His brain does not allow him to process the fact that his youth is actually a strike against him in certain regards.
Absolutely. You know, I read this one interview with Albee where he mentioned that Nick's name was kind of a reference to Nikita Khrushchev.
Which I didn't know until we started rehearsals, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Did you guys talk about that at all in the rehearsal hall? I mean, that might be a little too academic for
right.
to be helpful
well, it's
in
always,
the room.
It always seems to be in rehearsals that there is this measure of the academic talk that you do mm-hmm. around the table and in rehearsals, kind of trying to figure out the playwright's intention, like why he named a character a certain way or why he references this one specific moment in world history or something like that. And some of them are just clever devices on the part of a writer, mm-hmm. and some of them are actual intentions and actions to be played by an actor in a scene. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk about all of them, of course, and explore them, but sometimes it is just a writing device that a writer uses to reference something in the past, or there's a lot of also mentions of references to theater and playwrights and plays mm-hmm. and little quotations that nobody would pick up on, mm-hmm. but they're just kind of all these nods to the history of American theater and the things that we have gone through. So they're not really things you can play as an actor in a scene, but they're good to kind of just have in your, just to be a world that you live in.
Yeah.
To be aware of.
Yeah. You know, we've themed this season around the question of our public selves and our private selves and what happens when the door between them opens. And it strikes me that for Nick, in you know, we've talked about him as a very ambitious man.
And yes.
I would assume that his public face would be very important in those ambitions.
Yes.
I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about how you see that Nick presents himself publicly and what Nick is like behind closed doors and the differences between those. Now, I realize you guys are in the third week of rehearsal, so those
right.
answers may be evolving.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do change a lot. Nick, as long as he can, does keep up this public persona, which is to give off an air of success, of confidence, with his wife, Honey, mm-hmm. that there is a civility there. There is a care there. I think he is the breadwinner, and he is responsible for her, and he wants to be seen that way, that he's got it under control. Mm-hmm. She is taken care of. Mm-hmm. She's fine. We're a happy couple. Mm-hmm. And these things break down over the course of the play, where mm-hmm. the public breaks down to the private, where these four characters are sort of in a cell together.
Yeah.
As far as what Nick himself is like at home mm-hmm. on any other night besides the night that this play takes place, I think he's nowhere nearly as concerned with his wife as he appears to be in front of people. I think mm-hmm. he probably lets her do her own thing and buys her a bunch of magazines, I would think, to read. And but I think he's not nearly as engaged as he appears to be mm-hmm. In front of people. I think he probably studies a lot, reads a lot, and is not that interested in other people, I don't think.
That's interesting. I like the way that you described the play as being, you know, kind of four people locked in a cell, which is certainly true. And because the entire play is about the relationships between these four people, it has to have a degree of complexity and a degree of hotness in order to sustain, you know, what's going to be a three-hour play.
Right.
I would imagine that that fact played a role in the audition process. And I wonder if you can talk about that, about did you meet the other actors during auditions, you know, or was that kind of the question of how you would match up with the other people, you know, probably something that was dealt with, you know, outside of your presence.
Right, right. Meaning specifically Tracy and Amy, for
Tracy
example?
Tracy and Amy and Carrie, yeah.
Carrie I had not met until we had both been cast. Mm-hmm. And then we, with the help of Erica Daniels, took it upon ourselves to meet very quickly and start a friendship right away, knowing that we were both going to start this project together. Sweet. Tracy and Amy, luckily, we had them both for the first round of callbacks.
Mm-hmm.
So that was nice. I think Pam was very interested in kind of seeing how actors would respond with actually doing those scenes with Tracy and Amy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was good to have them in the room. They're both such big personalities. They're both so well-known and so accomplished mm-hmm. individuals in their careers that I guess it can be a little nerve-wracking for an actor. You know, I'm lucky enough I've bumped into them a few times over the last few years. I don't think they ever remember me after I bump into them because they meet so many people. But I was familiar with them, so I wasn't as nervous mm-hmm. in the audition just because I'd done, like, table readings of new plays with them before. So I felt okay. But I think that's important to have an actor, to have them to play with and kind of see, especially with Nick, who had to be threatening to George. You had to look like Nick could in some way hold his own against this man.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good, I think, for Pam to see.
Yeah.
And certainly good to play out in auditions.
When you had the first experience of, you know, playing a scene opposite Tracy in auditions, did it ring out differently in any way than the way that you had read it on the page? Were there things that were surprising to you about having just, you know, another living body and that particular person in that role that either made the audition process a little bit more uncertain than it would be otherwise or also gave new creative possibilities for you as an actor?
Knowing Tracy was going to play that part and having seen Tracy in several productions, I was aware of the caliber of actor he was, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so familiar with this play, and I had such an idea of George. I couldn't quite predict where Tracy was going to go with his reading. And I know he had done the role before mm-hmm. in a production that Amy directed in Atlanta. But in the audition room, the first callback, reading the scene from Act Two with Tracy, I realized exactly how strong he was going to let himself be.
Mm.
And Tracy's a big man. I mean, he's not a small guy. He's a tall guy. He's a physically imposing man. And just his reputation is just enormous.
Yeah.
And to see him play George that strongly, like a lion, helps you. I mean, it helps Nick be stronger. You make stronger choices and really have something to fight against. But it was a little scary. It's like, this guy's going to swing hard and the punches are going to hurt when they land because it's not 120-pound actor, 70 years old, playing this part. It's a young, it's a virile Tracy Letts playing this role. So it's dangerous when he gets those words in his mouth. Yeah.
Absolutely. Fierce. Yeah. One thing that strikes me is play is very informed by the kind of gender roles of the time in which it was written, right?
Yes.
There's an idea of what it means to be a man, an idea of what it means to be a woman.
Yes.
And I'm wondering... I think those notions of manhood and womanhood have changed on the surface quite a lot between now and then. But I'm wondering, do you feel like you can still connect to and feels familiar in Nick's notion of what it means to be a man, you know, and what feels foreign? You know, how familiar or how foreign does it feel to you as a modern man?
Well, I'll tell you the sad thing about that question is the fact that, in the sense of the play, George is very forward-thinking and embraced this woman's movement that is just about to start happening.
Mm-hmm.
And Nick obviously has not and does not subscribe to that. But even in 2010, I mean, I know friends from back home. I know friends here, certain men who, in certain lines of work, still feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, still push their wives back, and there's not an inequality in the relationship at all.
Mm-hmm.
This is an outmoded way of thinking
mm-hmm.
In certain men that I think certain fathers have perpetuated in their sons.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly to a much lesser degree than it was 50 years ago,
mm-hmm.
but it's still there. I mean, I still see that in people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of wildly upsetting to me, that I still see that with men. Mm-hmm. But the fact that I can completely see Nick and Honey today as mm-hmm. I could see them then.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why this play still has life and still can be done so many times.
Mm-hmm.
That a lot of these core issues about men and women and relationships still ring true. Where George and Martha are equals and there's like this mm-hmm. sharing going on. Mm-hmm. Nick and Honey, there isn't. There's yeah. a shutdown from him.
Which partially has to do with, as you described, who Nick is as a person.
Yes.
And his relationship to all the people in his life.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. That singleness of vision is can be toxic mm-hmm. to a marriage, to a partnership.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This has been a terrific conversation. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Joy. It was a pleasure.
If you'd like to join us for Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, you can find tickets at www.steppenwolf.org, where you can also learn about the rest of our programming.